Hi everyone, and thank you for tuning in to episode one of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast. I am your host, John, and I'll be the main host of the podcast going forward. I'm actually recording this intro a couple of weeks after the first episode that we did with Alana and Lawrence, as I realised when I was editing the podcast that in my eagerness to introduce you to my guests, as well as what we're trying to do with Antinatalist Advocacy, I hadn't really introduced myself and how I came to be speaking to you today. So, as I mentioned before, my name's John, I'm 28 years old, living in London, and I am an antinatalist advocate. I'll do a bit more of an in-depth episode in the future about how I came to be an antinatalist, but for now, I'll just say that I was coming across the philosophy of antinatalism, I've become convinced of the potential for antinatalism to make the world a better place. It might sound corny, but I truly believe that antinatalism at its core is a philosophy of love. One that seeks to protect sentient beings from the harms of coming into existence, and its desire to unlock this potential to do good in the world that brings me here today. This is very much an introductory episode to antinatalist advocacy as an organisation, and if we're successful, a broader social movement. It's actually a little shorter than some of the episodes that we'll be bringing you in the future, but we are hoping it will serve its purpose as an introduction to who we are and what we're looking to do. So, without further ado, I bring you episode one of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast with Alana and Lawrence. Enjoy. Welcome, everyone, to the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, where we speak to interesting and knowledgeable people about how best to protect sentient beings from the harms of coming into existence. I am your host, John, an antinatalist advocate from the UK, and today I'm joined by Lawrence and Alana. First off, Lawrence and Alana, what did you think of that introductory statement? That's the first time I've said it in full.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. And I'm enjoying the tones of your voice with a proper microphone.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very kind of you. What do you think, Alana?
I agree. I think it captures what we're about in a very succinct way.
Kick us off with a quick round of introductions, because I realize I just said Lawrence and Alana without saying what we're doing here today. So we are the Antinatalist Advocacy kind of core team, if you like, the three of us. So we'll quickly introduce ourselves, how we became antinatalists, how we got involved, that kind of thing. So Alana, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Alana, and I'm trying to think of what the most important things about me are, but I am 22 years old. I live in Montreal, Quebec. I'm in grad school, and the way that I became an antinatalist, I think it was a gradual process. Since I was a kid, I think I had this inkling that it started off as, if there are kids who need parents, so you know, kids who need to be adopted, I probably shouldn't have kids myself. And it kind of just evolved from there to a point where I kind of realized that it's not exactly the most ethical thing to do to bring kids into a world where suffering is guaranteed. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks, Alana. I tend to find that with antinatalists, quite a few of them have had these kind of inklings from quite a young age before they can put a name to it. I know that David Benatar talks about how people contact him quite a lot to say that his writings have helped name these thoughts and feelings that they've had for a while. But someone who definitely hasn't had these thoughts and feelings for a while and very much wanted to be a dad is Lawrence. So Lawrence, tell us how you became an antinatalist.
Yeah, hey everyone. Yeah, so I'm Lawrence. So I'm soon to be 26. And sometimes I have to think about that because I actually forget how old I am. Very regularly. I'm in London, based in London, born and raised here. And I became antinatalist, I think around, it'll be like 5 to 6 years ago now. Just from originally overhearing a conversation someone was having and hearing, like hearing the word, and then a few months later, the word came up again, and I'd been interested in it, and then I just, you know, sat down and had a conversation with a couple of people I knew, and they just talked me through it. And, you know, I sort of asked some questions and gave a bit of pushback, because some of the things, you know, I'd never heard of this, you know, this thing before. So it was kind of jarring a bit with some of my, you know, assumptions or about life, or however you want to put it. And then, yeah, it just, I, through having that conversation and listening to a few interviews that they recommended me listen to, it just, it made sense to me. I couldn't think of any good arguments against it. I had a few other conversations with people where I spoke about it from, you know, like arguing for it, and didn't get any good arguments from them. So I then just thought, you know, I've got to adopt it. And then, in terms of how I got involved in AA, is, well, it was through, there's a sort of debate club in London that John and I met at, and we met there for the first time, and on the walk back to the train station were talking about how, you know, we sort of wanted to invigorate more sort of organized activism in the antinatalist world, and we had a certain, you know, approach that we wanted to, we thought was a good one to take. And so we just basically just started to meet up and put ideas and pen to paper, or I guess fingers to keyboard nowadays. And then it just started growing. We came up with ideas of, you know, what we wanted to do as part of this organization. And then Alana got in contact with me, looking, you know, for ideas of activism. And then, yeah, and then Alana came on board, and then here we are now.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary of how we got here. The way you say it, Lawrence, about, you know, meeting up and then the long walk to the train station, it makes it sound very romantic, and I'm deeply flattered. But yeah, I think, similar to you, Lawrence, I kind of found out about antinatalism through the vegan sphere. I think that there is a natural, if not, veganism doesn't necessarily entail antinatalism, but I do think that there are definitely connections around wanting to protect beings from suffering by not bringing them into existence with respect to farm animals. And after coming across the work of David Benatar, who's someone who's already got a mention on this podcast, and I imagine will get mentioned quite a lot in future episodes, and yeah, I was able to connect with the philosophy, and it kind of named a lot of thoughts and feelings that I've been having for a while. And you're just mentioning there, Lawrence, about how we came to AA, which is the it is an acronym, isn't it? I'm terrible at those things. The acronym for, yeah, antinatalist advocacy, competing with Alcoholics Anonymous for the AA acronym, which I think is quite funny.
Yeah, our 12 steps is completely different, though.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely came from that desire to see more activism from antinatalists, to kind of get out there and have this positive impact in the world. I think I speak for all of us when I say that we think this philosophy can have a really positive impact for people, in terms of making the world a better place. And hopefully through antinatalist advocacy, we will be providing some means to do that. I think it would be good for us to try and explain a bit more about what we're trying to do here with antinatalist advocacy. So, like, in a nutshell, going back to you, Alana, how would you describe antinatalist advocacy for someone who'd first come across it?
Yeah, so I think the way I conceptualize it is that we're trying to, you know, spread the idea of antinatalism and help people understand it better. and then also embark on different projects and that sort of thing to really through the kind of lens of effective altruism, which is just essentially like thinking very thoroughly about our actions and our activism to ensure that they're evidence-based and that there's a strong rationale behind everything that we're doing. And I think that was one of the reasons that I kind of felt compelled to join you guys, because something that I've always felt strongly about is that kind of the individual one-on-one trying to convince people never really sat well with me. I think it's just something people are generally not receptive to, especially because they feel attacked quite often. And so though I feel strongly about antinatalism, I didn't feel strongly about advocating for it on an individual or personal level. And so that's what I really appreciate about the approach that we're taking. It's more kind of broad and doesn't necessarily require this one-on-one trying to tell people they're wrong.
Yeah, and I think that really ties into something that we were saying earlier about wanting to see activism that is kind of evidence-based and impact-driven. As we were saying earlier, that there are links to the vegan community and there's quite a lot of animal activism, which is very much focused on the individual change, convince everyone to go vegan kind of approach. And although antinatalist activism is very young, there isn't a huge amount out there. Given the overlap between the antinatalist and vegan communities, we were a bit concerned that we didn't want antinatalist activism to be restricted to the kind of dominant activist approaches that are prominent in animal rights, where it is very much focused on that individual kind of one-to-one change. We wanted to explore different approaches and approaches that are supported by evidence, as we were mentioning. And I was thinking, Lawrence, with antinatalist advocacy, as you'll be able to see on our website, and of course there will be all the links in the description of this podcast, we've managed to identify four key areas to focus on with antinatalist advocacy, because it is not all about human procreation. So I wondered, Lawrence, if you could talk us through those four key areas and why you think that they show a lot of promise for antinatalists to have a positive impact.
Yeah, so one quick thing I want to say, just in answer to the previous question as well, which I thought is valuable to communicate to people, because I think Alana did cover it, but it took a while for me for this to click in my head. So I wanted to maybe say it another way for it to click in other people's head, because I think sometimes people are not suspicious is the wrong word, but they think that there's another organization that comes along and they have their way of doing things, and they sort of go full steam ahead with that and try and prescribe it onto everyone else. But as Alana said, we want to basically understand what is the best thing to do. And so it's more of exercising a mechanism of trying to find out what the best thing to do is and following the path where it leads, rather than saying, this is the form of activism we want to do, and therefore we're just going to press ahead with this without really thinking about actually, well, is this the best thing to do? But anyway, so answering your question, John, about the four areas. So the first one is obviously human procreation. So I don't think this really needs much elaboration, because this is sort of the bread and butter or vegan butter of antinatalism, right? So I think everyone knows the ins and outs of this when it comes to antinatalism. But the three other areas are animal agriculture, wild animal suffering, and artificial sentience. And the reason we broke it down into these four areas is because we thought, well, the reason that we as antinatalists are concerned with human procreation is because it's a process through which, you know, new beings come into existence who are sentient and can suffer. And we think that there is an ethical issue in that. And then if you think about the reasons for being opposed to that or thinking that it's ethically problematic, it seems to come down to the fact that basically you're creating someone who can suffer, seems to be the core thing. And when you focus in on that, it then becomes obvious that actually it doesn't just apply to human procreation, because there are other, obviously other beings who come into existence and fall under that that sort of criteria, right? So the next thing that we think is sort of like the most, I'm not sure if relatable is the right term, but maybe comes to mind the quickest, is animal agriculture, because obviously humans intentionally breed each other into existence, but we also breed other animals into existence in places like farms, etc. And we think this is, you know, a significant issue, because the way we see it is it's essentially the same thing as bringing another human into existence. Obviously, just this is more explicitly done for profit, and on a much larger scale. Then the next sort of cause area that we identified was wild animal suffering. Now, the issue with wild animal suffering, which it sort of separates it out from the other three, is that wild animals don't come into existence out of the actions of humans, you know, apart from maybe for some sort of like fringe cases of conservation and stuff like that. But wild animals would be in existence whether humans were around or not. And so obviously the ethical issue of critiquing the action of bringing sentient life into existence doesn't apply to wild animals because they're not moral agents. But as antinatalists, at least us in antinatalist advocacy, we still view it as a harm that those beings come into existence. And we see it rather than an immoral situation, it's more just an unfortunate situation. And so we think if there is an unfortunate situation out there, you know, whatever it may be, there are a plethora of unfortunate situations that exist. We think if others can help the situation in some way, that, and we have the capacity to do so, then we should try and find responsible and ethical ways to do that. Emphasis on the words responsible and ethical. And then the final one is artificial sentience, which comes back to human agency. So humans would be creating these artificial minds. But this is more sci-fi. This is sort of like the more out there cause area. But it's becoming increasingly pressing, because the rate of development in artificial intelligence is really ramping up. And at the moment, consciousness is something which is still a mystery, and so we don't actually know if it's something that humans ourselves can replicate in non-biological substrate. But if we can, then we exist in a world where artificial sentience may come around, and that's something worrying given the fact that it can be replicated a lot easier than biological means, because obviously with biological means you have to have gestation and things like this, whereas with artificial sentience you wouldn't have to have that, presumably. So that's the final cause area that we think is a bit more sci-fi, but we think the fundamentals of the ethics are the same as human procreation and bringing other animals into existence, but it does have some sort of differences to it in terms of, you know, it wouldn't be in a biological substrate. But is that a decent enough overview, John? I'm not sure if I waffled on a bit too much there.
Definitely. And I think what you said about the wild animals being in an unfortunate situation rather than the moral one, I think was a beautiful way of explaining how, although the animals aren't in the situation that we have put them in and maybe are not responsible for, they are still in this unfortunate situation. And if we do have the power to act, then maybe that we should. So yeah, I think a brilliant overview of the four areas, Lawrence. I'm wondering, Alana, as someone who didn't come to antinatalism from the vegan sphere in this kind of sentiocentric ideas around antinatalism, what do you think are some of the opportunities and some of the challenges when it comes to having the focus on antinatalism with those four cause areas being much broader than just human procreation?
I think that's a really good question because it's something that I had thought about, like, as you said, because I entered the antinatalism space kind of independently of anything else. So one experience that I've had is that I like interacted in antinatalist spaces, especially like on Reddit a lot before, not so much now, but there's a lot of kind of division in the antinatalist like community on Reddit specifically. I think it also exists in other spaces. I know a Discord recently opened up and I've seen similar like, you know, divisions, but there are antinatalists who are vegans and antinatalists who are not vegans. And there's a lot of like kind of tension between those two groups. And so because I know that there's like a significant number of antinatalists who are not vegans, that was me for a while, but not anymore. But I think a lot of antinatalists see it, their like position of antinatalists as independent of being vegan. And so there, I could see potential concern around like maybe over representation, or I don't know if over representation is the right term, but basically like extending the label of antinatalism further than everybody kind of sees it. But at the other, like on the other side of it, I think it is a really great opportunity to connect these important concepts for people who might not see them as so interconnected. And I think, you know, our approach isn't to, you know, call people out or name call or, you know, tell people that they are bad people. I think we have a gentle approach, and I think that is a good opportunity to maybe, you know, not convince, but kind of expose people to these ideas around animal suffering, and might be a gentle like nudge to consider it, as opposed to the other ways I've seen like vegan antinatalists try to convince non-vegan antinatalists to be vegan on the internet through a lot of like name calling and just a lack of compassion for their circumstances. So yeah.
Thanks, Alana. And there's one really key word that you mentioned there around compassion. And I think that is underpinning a lot of what we're trying to do here at Antinatalist Advocacy. But now that we've got these four cause areas, human procreation, animal agriculture, wild animal suffering, and artificial sentience, a lot of people might be asking, what are you going to do about it? So you've highlighted these areas, but what is AA actually planning to do? So, Lawrence, why don't you kick us off with some of the key aims of AA and how they relate to using antinatalism to make the world a better place?
Cool. So I'll sort of start by answering in a zoomed out way, and then maybe we can sort of zoom into some specific projects we want to or we will be working on. And we can maybe each go over the ones that we're sort of heading individually. So to start with the zoomed out sort of approach. So on a very broad level, essentially what we want to do is encourage the antinatalist community to, one, take up doing activism, but you know, activism simply just meaning to, propagate the idea or to create some positive good in the world when it comes from an antinatalist perspective. Because I think a lot of the antinatalist community is you could say just a community rather than a movement at the moment. But we also want to encourage the adoption of more impact-focused thinking when it comes to that activism. And then again, in a very broad way, we also want to increase the adoption of antinatalism in other communities that seek to do good in the world, right? Because there are many communities out there, but we believe that they have somewhat of a blind spot of not seeing antinatalism for the tool for doing good that we think it is. And then again, just generally, we want to make antinatalism more well known in mainstream culture. So those are sort of three very broad overall things we want to do. So to zoom in one more level, there are sort of six main overarching activities that we want to engage in to further these three overall aims that, you know, we want to achieve. So the first one is networking. So we want to facilitate the antinatalist community networking more within itself, so that more people can build bridges with each other. And once those bridges are built, ideas can flow across them. And hopefully then there will be, you know, a greater increase, but also diversity in the forms of activism that are being done. But also the antinatalist community networking outside of itself as well. So building bridges within itself, but also across to other people, organizations, communities. The second one is disseminating information. I think this one is pretty self-explanatory. It's essentially just disseminating information that's relevant to antinatalism on a very basic level, trying to propagate the idea and other things that we think are related to the idea that we think will be useful in furthering antinatalist activism or advocacy. The third one is supporting organizations. So this one is perhaps a bit further down the road, but essentially what one thing that we want to do in the long term with antinatalist advocacy is really help build foundations that other people can use to build off of. And so by no means is antinatalist advocacy going to be, well, it's not the first antinatalist organization. It's not going to be the last. And so one thing that we want to do is help build foundations for future antinatalist organizations to build stronger structures off of, basically. The third thing we want to do is essentially the same, but with individual people. We want to support individual antinatalists to be able to go out and do activism in the way that they can. And we essentially want to help people realize their potential when it comes to doing antinatalist advocacy. And then the last two are community building. And the last one is conducting research. So conducting research is kind of something that underpins all the other ones. Essentially, there's already knowledge out there on how to do things or why to do things, all of this sort of stuff, or just gaining an understanding of certain things. But there's also, you know, the fact that antinatalism and antinatalist advocacy is really not a well understood thing, but also just well researched. So yeah, one thing we want to do is help facilitate more research being done in this area, which can hopefully then go on to support advocacy in the future. I realize I've just spoken quite a lot there. So Alana, do you want to cover your project first and then we can come back to me after?
Definitely. I was just thinking that on the topic of supporting individuals, it'd be great to hear more about your podcast, Alana, that you're planning to launch soon.
Yeah. So like John just alluded to, we have another podcast, but it's a bit of a different flavor. And it kind of was motivated by the idea that we, like, as antinatalists have sometimes very different experiences than people who are not antinatalists. And sometimes that can be a pretty lonely experience and also a confusing one. We wanted to kind of provide kind of a space or, yeah, a space to talk about that and also maybe share our experiences in our personal lives with other people who are also in the same boat. So this other podcast that we're working on is more geared towards people who are already antinatalists and just want to hear things being talked about from other antinatalists. So we kind of have been talking about it as a more lifestyle focused podcast. And yeah, it was it falls under our activities that of supporting individuals and community building. So the hope there is to talk to people about their romantic relationships, their potential kids, or and how they are having kids, or if they already have kids, what that is like for them. And talking about things in our, you know, in pop culture or daily life that are talked about by other people, but then we will talk about them from an antinatalist lens. So was that an adequate summary?
Definitely. Thanks, Alana. Because there's something you mentioned there about how we as antinatalists have quite different experiences from people who are not antinatalists. And I was just reflecting earlier about how, like, being an antinatalist does just touch so many different areas of our lives, and there really isn't that support network out there necessarily for people to come together and to share experiences. I know that a lot of people in the antinatalist community are understandably struggling with being an antinatalist in a natalist world. So hopefully this podcast and our other activities will help in supporting antinatalists to be happy, healthy, and also to get out there and really use antinatalism as a force for good. I'm not sure if, have we decided on a name of the podcast just yet, Alana?
Oh yes, I did not mention it. It's going to be called Embracing Antinatalism. Great. So it was, that name is kind of coming from a place where we believe that it's not, like, I think antinatalists often, like, even within themselves, but are perceived by others as a very, like down group of people. And that, you know, having this outlook on the world is like guaranteed suffering. And I think my experience has been the opposite. It's been really liberating, kind of coming to this realization and seeing the world in this way. But I know that it's not an easy transition to go from, oh my goodness, like, why are we here? Like, this is kind of ridiculous, to actually, I can still enjoy my life. And I am hoping that embracing antinatalism kind of bridges that gap that exists, yet a gap that has very few resources to bridge it. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Definitely. And I couldn't agree more. I think I definitely have feelings in the past of, even though I've had a very privileged and quite cushy life, I thought that something was maybe wrong with me, something that I was being ungrateful, that I was squandering opportunities, that the reason that I, despite having a very good life, I just couldn't see much of a point to life in general. And it just did occur to me that so many, especially non-human sentient beings, would have just been better off if they had never come into existence and hadn't had to experience the things that they'd gone through. And I thought that there was something wrong with me for coming to that conclusion. So yes, embracing antinatalism as a philosophy has certainly had a massive positive impact in my life. All of these tie into one of our plans towards the end of this year. If everything goes well. So why don't you tell us about the Antinatalist Advocacy Conference that we're planning?
Yeah, so this one is exciting, but it's also going to be a lot of work. So one thing we wanted to do was really bring people together and bring ideas together, share ideas, really provide an actual tangible way that people can interact with each other. And one way that we thought would be good to do that is by hosting an antinatalist conference. Now, a tiny bit of backdrop to this. So there were two things that have happened in the past which sort of at least brought this idea to my mind. And I'm sure this was maybe an idea that came to Alana and John's mind as well, independently. The first one was that there has actually been an antinatalist conference before, and it was called Antinatalism Under Fire. It was hosted in person somewhere in Europe. I can't remember which country. And whilst that is, whilst I would have loved to have been there, I just didn't know about it at the time. And I think it is a really good idea. I would love to go to an in-person conference. I think that in terms of connecting people up, whilst there are massive benefits to in-person conferences, just the logistics of it at this point in time, and also wanting to make the conference accessible to as many people as possible, we thought it would be better to at least start with an online conference. And we also have somewhat of a precedent for this in a separate, well, linked but separate community, the Child Free community. So there's the Child Free convention that happens every year. They host an online convention. I'm not actually sure if there is a technical difference between a convention and a conference. Should probably know that by now. But I've seen for the past few years that they've been doing that, and they seem to have been very successful, and they've got a good format going. And it just made me think, well, why can't we have something like this for antinatalism? They have had one antinatalist panel, I think, on the Child Free Convention. But obviously it would be great to have a whole convention conference for antinatalism so that we can then explore a whole range of topics within antinatalism over the course of, a conference, and be able to draw on the minds of loads of different people and inspire even more people. I'm not sure how many more details I should give at this point, but it will be near the end of the year, if all goes well. We will be covering a range of topics. It will be completely free for people to attend. So, we don't want any barriers to be in the way of people attending, apart from an internet connection, which unfortunately we can't help people with. So they will have to overcome that barrier themselves. But as long as someone's got an internet connection, we want people to be able to attend this conference. Is there any important detail that you think should be shared at this point, John, that I've missed out?
No, I think you've covered everything there. Towards the end of the year, as you're saying, we're thinking like late November / early December, holiday period here in the West.
Yeah, something like that.
Great. Well, thank you both. This has been a bit of a whistle stop tour in terms of who we are at Antinatalist Advocacy and what we are planning to do. I should maybe talk a little bit more about what people can expect from this podcast now that we've kind of got this introductory one out of the way. So we're planning monthly episodes to be released on the first of every month for now. Potentially, if all goes well, slightly more frequent episodes, but we will see. You'll definitely have at least one per month. And we're planning on talking with people who are antinatalists, people who align with antinatalism on certain areas with respect to some of the cause areas, even people who we disagree with, because we definitely don't want to turn into an echo chamber. But the topic will be how the philosophy of antinatalism can help make the world a better place. The focus will be on giving people options to kind of put this stuff into practice. We don't just want to share ideas and have interesting conversations, although we definitely plan on doing a lot of that. We always want to make sure that people have an option to kind of take practical steps to, as we were saying, make the world better with the philosophy of antinatalism. So we will definitely be exploring that in future episodes. Lawrence and Alana, is there anything else that you wanted to cover today in this introductory episode to antinatalist advocacy?
No, I think the only thing that I would add is... Actually, no, scratch that. I got nothing. So just edit that out.
No, I think leave that part in, Lauren. So yeah, please do check out the links in the description box below. You'll find our social media link down there, as well as our website, which is a resource on different ways that people can take action on the cause areas that we've mentioned, all kinds of updates. We will also have an email newsletter coming out and a link in the description so that you can be in touch with that. In a monthly newsletter to keep you up to date with all things antinatalist advocacy, because I feel it's fair to say that we're really scratching the surface in this podcast. We have a lot of ideas in the pipeline, and we're just trying to make sure that we aren't biting off too much, biting off more than we can chew. I think that's the phrase. I'm always butchering these kind of phrases. So great. Thank you very much, Lawrence and Alana. And of course, keep your eyes peeled, well, not so much your eyes, but your ears open, for the first episode of Embracing Antinatalism. When will that be released, Alana?
Yeah, so the Embracing Antinatalism episodes will also come out monthly, but they'll come out 2 weeks after these episodes are released, so on the 15th of each month. In 2 weeks, you can expect the first episode of Embracing Antinatalism.
Great, thanks both. Something that I'm trying to do of a bit of a regular feature going forward is to end on a positive note. Antinatalism is understandably seen as a very pessimistic philosophy, and I certainly don't view pessimism as a dirty word. I think that a pessimistic outlook on life can help really see and show a lot of empathy with the many sentient beings, other people who are struggling and going through a tough time. So I certainly don't view pessimism as a dirty word. But as we were mentioning earlier, there are a lot of people in the antinatalist community who are struggling. And I thought it would be therefore helpful if we could try and end every episode on a positive note with something that people can feel positive about in their day-to-day lives with respect to antinatalism and making the world a better place. So I'll start with you, Lawrence. What are you feeling positive about with respect to antinatalist advocacy?
Yeah, well, I think one thing I feel actually relatively positive about is actually, so last night from when we're recording this, John and I actually went to an event in London to watch Peter Singer talk. And we previously, I think a couple of weeks ago, went to an event to watch Will McCaskill talk. Now, neither of those two people are antinatalist, and Will McCaskill is actually extremely pro-natalist. But when we, both times, both of us asked questions, and both of our questions were on the topic of antinatalism. So we got to ask those two people four questions in total about antinatalism or related to antinatalism. And both times, whilst they disagreed, they were really engaged with answering the questions. And especially in the Peter Singer event, the other people who were there having the conversation with him, I thought were very engaged in listening to the answers. So that kind of gave me like a positive feeling, because I thought it's a topic that actually is not necessarily, in some places it is, but I think it's becoming increasingly, maybe not well received, but openly received, if that makes sense. People are open to talking about it in public places. That, you know, both of these events are in front of hundreds of people. So yeah, that made me positive about, you know, the potential for antinatalism and what antinatalist advocacy can do.
Definitely. I just want to second those points. I think the fact that two very, very serious philosophers who aren't necessarily antinatalists, and certainly in the case of Will MacCaskill, have ideas that run very much counter to antinatalism, the fact that they acknowledge the validity of these ideas and how this is an incredibly serious topic, and that there are many people who take ethics seriously and want to make the world a better place who have these ideas. I found that definitely quite validating and reassuring. Alana, what are you positive about with respect to advocating for antinatalism?
Well, I'd say right now I'm really excited about the podcasts that we're kind of making come to life. It feels like we are recording this so soon after the idea. So soon after we came up with the ideas. And so it's really cool to see them coming to life. And I'm excited to help people in the community feel heard, because I definitely was looking for something like this. And the number of things out there for antinatalists is pretty limited. So I'm feeling really hopeful and happy about that.
Great. Thanks, Alana. And keep, as I was saying before, keep your ears open for the first episode of Embracing Antinatalism on the 15th of July. But thanks again, both. And thanks to you for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. To find out more about AA, including careers advice, donation recommendations, and different ways to get involved, you can go to our website at www.antinatalistadvocacy.org. To keep up to date with what we're up to, feel free to subscribe to our monthly newsletter and follow us on your favourite social media platforms. Links to all of the above are in the description. As always, we are hoping you will join us in our antinatalist advocacy.